and Tony Martin, who's author, broadcaster, man about town. That's and lots of other things. Do you see him on the television on, you know, on Thank God You're Here? Do you do the new series?
I think so. I think I was down in mine at one point. I don't know what was happening.
Now, I've got, I'm doing a special next week about songs that changed your world. And I'm want to get a few people on. I've got some people like Robert Forster and the Vicar of Baghdad.
Oh, okay.
You know, I won't do a show without him anymore. and I'm just asking whether some people will call in and, you know, come on the show. And I wanted to ask you guys about songs that have changed your world. And there's an amazing text here. If you wish to text in, it's 1974774 from Sarah. And she says she was trying to decide in 2002 whether to accept a kidney transplant from her father, then heard Frank Sinatra's I've Got You Under My Skin on ABC Radio and said yes.
Oh, yes.
That's just amazing.
That is great. One of the, perhaps the greatest 45 ever, maybe.
Oh.
Don't you think?
Big that, call.
Certainly the greatest trombone solo in history.
No. I think Tear It Down by Dixie's Midnight Runners, a guy called Big Jimmy who plays the trombone. No, we can't start this.
No, because I'm seeing
a descent into trombone based madness.
I'm
Call Me Al. Call Me Al.
Certainly the best trombone influenced film clip with Paul Simon tromboning it up with Chevy Chase.
I don't want to pull the ace out of the deck, but 76 trombones is pretty good as well.
I'm distracted constantly during this conversation by a copy of Architecture and Morality, is that it?
Yeah,
by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. I had that album.
I played She's Leaving the first hour of the show, and from 1981 this is. Yeah, you can have a look at it. Sure. I also played a Penguin Cafe Orchestra song from 1981 before.
I've got one, Alan.
You have got one.
A transition life moment. I guess if you use music to sort of bookmark moments in your life, the day after my daughter was born, I walked in the rain at the Edinburgh Gardens and was listening quite loud on my iPod to The Killers. I Got Soul Because I'm a Soldier or whatever.
What's that called?
It's called...
It's off the first Killers record.
Yeah, off that one. And I was singing it very loudly with my headphones on, quite, you know, as though my partner and my daughter are in hospital. And there was a young kid pointing and laughing at me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I regard that song as a, you know, that's my new life as a parent, being pointed at and laughed at.
And I'd like to mention the song Shoop Shoop Diddy Wop Kama Kama Wang Dang by Monty Video and the Cassettes, which of course...
Why would you like to mention that?
Because that was, much as we may laugh, that was a great New Zealand classic, Alan.
Yeah.
It was recorded in the studios at Radio Hauraki in Auckland by a man called Murray Grindley. He was a man who did jingles for New Zealand radio for advertisements on the TV as well. And he... recorded it at Radio Hauraki. So I was in that booth. I think it was one of my first jobs in radio in Auckland, and someone went, you know, it's like a booth the size of a phone booth, recording a voiceover, and someone went, this is the room where Shoop Shoop Diddy Wop Kama Kama Wang Dang was recorded.
So it's the New Zealand equivalent of going to Apple Studios and someone saying, this is where they did the Hey Jude film clip.
Absolutely. Prestigious. Hallowed ground.
If you would like to be on the show next week, you can call in, or you can even come into the studio. We've got, it's pretty flash in here now, actually. We'll give you a biscuit. You can give us a call, 13... Okay, I've been told we won't give you a biscuit. It's evidently an OH&S thing. I don't know. Maybe the biscuits are made of poison. There was obviously some incident. Can I just say the ABC does not endorse putting poison in biscuits?
No.
It really doesn't. Neither does any of the people on the show, whose views are entirely their own. So now I've done all that now. The commentary expressed on this DVD is not that of Sony Entertainment.
No, and none of these conversations can be played on an oil rig.
Or in a bus.
No.
You can call 1-300-222-774 and tell us what your song is and how it changed your world, and you might be able to come on the show. Very briefly, I've just got a couple of texts here about the graffiti that we were talking about before. Highland, did you ever see the artwork in the Avery, that's the exercise yard of Pentridge Jail after it closed? Magic. Such wasted talent of inmates for other reasons. No. I did not spend as much time in the exercise yard as Pentridge as I might have hoped, because I was in solitary.
Not even after they yuppified it and turned it into apartments, Alan. I thought you might go over at that time.
I've got a rule about where I live no one should have been hanged within 100 metres of my house. It's, I'm really old-fashioned about that.
Well, just give us your address and we'll give you an update on whether anyone has.
How are those? What do they call those apartments at the Pentridge? Is it Pentridge Heights or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. I'm not sure. Someone will be, if you know, text or call 19774774 or 1300222774 if indeed you live at Pentridge.
Jaika jacuzzis?
But don't you think that would be the perfect possible ending to the Chopper Reed story, for him to buy one of those apartments and move in there?
Yes, or him to become a slumlord at Pentridge. And here's an SMS. No vacancy is a gallery in QV building to support contemporary young emerging artists, including street artists and community projects. Well, there we go. No vacancy in the QV building. Now, one of the main reasons I got you guys on here, apart from to talk about trombone solos and songs, which I could do for quite some time, is you've both just recently finished books. You're
writing them, we should point out.
No, I've got you on because you just finished reading a book, and it's just...
It's the Day of the Jackal. It's fantastic. It's taken me 12 years, but... Yeah.
Didn't they make it into a film?
Edward Fox.
Yeah. Oh, great film. Great. No, let's stop. This is going to go the trombone madness way. Your second collection of short stories.
Yes, true short stories, is called A Nest of Occasionals, and that will be explained when it comes out.
Yeah. And is it your second novel or...?
Second fiction. Yeah. I guess that's a novel, isn't it? Fiction.
Eighth book, Alan. It's his
eighth book.
I pump out those 500-word picture books. Sort of, but when other people go on holiday to Queensland at the end of writing a big project, I sit down and say, I'm going to find 500 more words and try and turn it into another book. That's how children's authors think. But I've just done the second satirical novel, again based in the world of sport and media.
Because the first one was The Player.
Players,
that's right.
If only it was The Player and that Robert Altman had based his film around my work, I'd be a very rich man.
I loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. So, and you both finished in the same week?
We did. We were sort of having this thing where we'd meet once a month for several drinks, usually at Handsome Steve's, and say, how are you going? You know, it's the difficult second book syndrome, or difficult eighth book syndrome.
Surely it can't be that difficult after eight of them. Well, just run it off in between other engagements.
They're almost different people, though, the adult author me and the children author me.
Right.
Well, the children author me just does mad puns while he washes the dishes and says, will that pun work as a title? And the adult author me tries to put a skewer through society.
Yeah. It's your second novel, that's what you mean.
Yeah. Tony was very has been very helpful with the loneliness and the and the depression and the doubt and the fear
and the constant conversations, hunched over beers, where it's not as good as the first one. There's not as many jokes. It's like when someone makes a second film and it's way more expensive, but it's not as funny. You know, endless discussions like that. But we did. I think we finished pretty much all first drafts in the same week.
We did.
How difficult is that idea that you've done one book, both your first works of fiction were lauded by all the people that I know, and I know a lot of folk, and is it really difficult, because do you write a story, Tony Martin, and then just go, this isn't as good as the first one, because your expectations are different now than when you started your first book?
Well, this was just a continuous process. Like, I just started writing these stories, and when I had enough for one book, I just, like, it was pens down, and that's the first book. And then I just kept
going.
What
is enough? Is it 60,000 words, 70,000 words?
70,000 words now, I think, is a book.
Oh, that is, so is that's this? Good to know at home, 70,000.
Well, I mean, The Great Gatsby's only 50,000 words.
Yeah, right, just not putting in. Yeah. Well, I was once in an airport and I saw two old ladies, and they both had a copy of the new Bryce Courtney book in hardcover. And, you know, they're like doorstops. They're like 900 pages.
They're like bed sits now, aren't they? Maybe those two ladies were living in their books.
You can move into a Bryce Courtney. But they were sitting there.
At Pentridge.
I was overhearing them say, it was a conversation along these lines. It's such good value for money with a Bryce Courtney. That's what I love about a Bryce Courtney. It's such good money. And you wanted them to continue along the lines of, because that Camus, he's not putting in, that's 70 pages, The Outsider. I wouldn't buy that. But I love that theory of it's value for money. And then you get some people like Delia Falconer. Like, her last novel was, I think it was like 25 words. I think it might have been.
You need to contact Andrew Bolton. He will give you the updated list of most dollars of government grants per word of novel. And Delia Falconer is probably on any shooting gallery. Yes.
Is that how he spends his time?
Yeah. He's very angry about government grants to writers.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They annoy him because writers sit around drinking coffee and criticising John Howard. Therefore, we should not be paying them for that life.
No, okay, I'd never thought of it that way. Fair enough. I'm speaking to Tony Martin and Tony Wilson, and we're ostensibly talking about the fact that they finished their most recent books on this in the same week, but it could go anywhere, yes. Really. And Trombones have already been canvassed.
Architecture and Morality has been mentioned. I never thought I would see this album in at the ABC. Have you played something off this?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I played She's Leaving in the first hour.
How did it sound?
It sounded awesome. It actually sounds really, really contemporary. It's like they've clocked it. It's so long ago that they made this record. Yeah. We're speaking about a record called Architecture and Morality by a band called Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, or OMD to their friends, who pretty much the last decent thing they did was a song on the soundtrack of Pretty in Pink, the John Hughes film, and then it was all downhill from there.
That's right.
Yeah, they're the Simple Minds of analog synthesizers now. So your second work of fiction. You've written non-fiction. You wrote about the Soccer World Cup, didn't
yep.
you?
And Australia United.
Yeah. And what are your kids' books called?
And Grannysaurus Rex, Harry Highpants. The latest one is called The Princess and the Packet of Frozen Peas.
Oh, contemporary, but classic.
Well, it's looking at the whole question of how annoying would the princess in The Princess and the Pea be if she's going to complain about a pea under 20 mattresses. She is the very definition of high maintenance. high mattresses, high maintenance. And so I thought, the brother of the person who's married that princess would maybe eye her off as what he doesn't want to marry. And so he sets a test with a packet of frozen peas and a camping blanket.
And hasn't this has come out in England, hasn't it?
My first foray into the international world. But the next book is actually, the satirical novel is international as well. It's set in London. And this is Alan. We'll play Guess the Plot I Should Have Done or the one I've done, right?
Okay.
It's about a sporting, it's about the entrapment of a sporting star and media. Would you write the novel at the moment, given all the things that are going on, would you write about the kind of blokey malaise of sporting clubs and how it leads to these sex scandals?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you write about, more from the sports star's point of view, that anyone is vulnerable if you're under an enormous amount of media scrutiny? You can write either of those two books. Which one should you do?
Well, it depends. Do you want to be commercially viable or do you want to make a good story? Because I think I see where you're going here, and I'm imagining that you picked plot two.
I did do plot two. Yeah. I think I mentioned media in my introduction, which gave it away, unfortunately. But yeah, I've gone with plot two. But as those stories just keep rolling out...
And don't they keep... I saw that with the bloke who was nude and took a dump in a corridor.
Yeah.
He's on the front of the Sydney Morning Herald website today saying, that's just business as usual. I don't know why anyone's complaining about that. I wasn't even drunk. That's just normal practice around here.
See, this is the thing. We've all been on tours, and I've been on tours with rock and roll people who are notorious for being skinny and all the things that stem from that.
Yes.
But not once has any of them ever pooed in a hotel corridor.
No.
And these people are crazy.
Yet
sports people just can't keep their pants on in hotels.
Although
they're
also
constantly knocking on families' doors and someone's looking through and going, there's a nude in our... I mean, the thing is, I think people will be surprised when there's not a nude NRL star outside their door.
Although, in choosing which character, because I want this person to have a big fall from grace, a celebrity having a fall from grace, it's amazing how, when I considered, I'll make him a rock star, or I'll make him a television star, all these kind of showbiz elements, if you fall into scandal as a rock star or a film star, there is a certain kudos that goes with it, I reckon, that there isn't that kind of... finger wagging that goes at entertainment celebrities that is directed at sporting stars.
You know what? It's because of the word role model. Like, people don't go, oh, well, Tommy Lee, he's a role model. He's letting down. Whereas footballers just get thrust into this horrible role model role that I'm assuming they didn't sign up for in the beginning when they were imagining a life of football and dumps in corridors.
And Chris Judd was interviewed a week or two ago, and they said, you once said that you weren't a role model. But that was the way that... He said, I never said that. I said that footballers shouldn't be role models. Mm. And he was actually intelligent enough to be able to draw that semantic difference. He clearly, I am a role model, and I hate it, was the subtext.
Just completely off the point, Kyle called in from Coburg. All the talking about Architecture and Morality by OMD. Kyle has called in to ask me to play Georgia from Architecture and Morality, and he's gone, please. So I'm not really sure. I'm not sure about whether I've got a policy about playing two tracks by the same artist in one show. Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do, Kyle. I absolutely promise that next week I will play Georgia Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark off the album.
In stereo?
In stereo. Well, it depends on what...
Can you get the entire AM band to go into stereo by next week?
No, we're digital now. Digital. We actually... This show lives entirely in the future.
Does it?
Yeah, it is. You can, and evidently you can get additional information about the show. Like, you know, a crawl on the news on television.
Right.
Well, evenly, I think you can get that on your digital radio or something like that.
In your car, possibly.
Yeah, in your car, possibly. So, Kyle, I will play. I'll keep hold of Architecture and Morality because I got it from upstairs in the record library where those sort of records go to sit and wait for me to come and find them. I hear their squeaking in the night and I go straight to them. It's great. I go into the record library and I ask for things and they just look at me like, man... We thought you'd never come. It's like taking in the shoe and going, does this shoe fit you? And they just go, yeah, and I'll give you a copy of Architecture and Morality while you're there.
Here's a copy of Vienna, too. Enjoy.
Oh, don't start me. We might have to have all electronic 80s in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Bust out a whole bunch of that sort of stuff.
It's coming back. I mean, if you tune into Triple J, you'll often think you're listening to something off Dare by the Human League, and then you'll discover it was recorded 2 weeks ago.
It's all the rage.
By 12-year-olds in their bedroom in Glasgow or
That's
something
right.
like that.
No one's covered Chaka Khan yet, though, have they?
Don't say things like that out loud, because it's morphic resonance then. Someone is going to be listening and go, yes, it's yes, time. I feel for you. Is that what it was called? I feel for you. Yeah, that's it. Needs to be covered by my garage band or something like that. When are the books out?
Mine's supposed to be out when it comes back from the printers on October 1, I think.
October 1. Mm. That's not far away.
And my agent's speaking to publishers in 2010.
There's a bidding war going on, that's what I've heard.
I can imagine. Yeah. I've never been involved. What's it like being involved in a bidding war?
There's a lot of blood.
Is there?
Yeah, the humanity.
There's a lot of people in tweed jackets and cravats getting angry with each other.
And smoking pipes really hard.
Oh, yeah.
So, since you finished the books, have you had, you know, obviously had a little bit more free time? I mean, obviously you have to now think up the Punish title for your next children's book. But what have you been going to the pictures or reading other things?
Both of us have been involved in is a website, which you may have seen on the internet, called The Scrivener's Fancy, which is rather pompously dedicated to the written word. And there's no pictures or clips or anything. It's just a series of columns. And Tony is on board there as one of our visiting scriveners. So I've just been spending a lot of time doing that.
The Scrivener's Fancy, I can say from experience, is a very fine website. And it doesn't lose anything not having video content.
No.
You know, I can look at sites without having to wonder whether some Japanese teenagers have lip-synced to a 1970s song.
There's no cats driving speedboats to be seen.
Yeah, but you can go to catsdrivingspeedboats.org
and
you can get all of the stuff that you need. There is also a website that I've got onto recently called Eating and Crying. And I'm not even sure why it's in. It's just video of people eating while crying.
Oh, there's so many. Have you been to Sleeve Face?
No.
Sleeve Face is a hard thing to describe on the radio. It's where people get a vinyl record cover and hold it up in such a way that they are forming the rest of the picture.
That's brilliant!
So I don't even know if I'm quite explaining this correctly, but a simple example would be someone with their face on the front of an album and you can see what shirt they're wearing, so you put on that exact shirt and then you hold it up in such a way that it forms your face and then the picture bleeds off into the... I don't know if you understand what I'm saying.
No, I do completely understand, and you know what disturbs me about it is I find it really commendable that people would A, do that, and B, put it up on the internet.
It's amazing. It's like, because the challenge is to not not just do a face one, is to do something, find a really elaborate, like a Pink Floyd album cover, yeah, and then do the rest of what's outside
Sergeant
the
Peppers.
Frame.
Exactly, yeah, Sergeant Peppers, or a Roxy Music cover, and convince, yes, two of your housemates to wear only their underwear.
It's for a good cause. It's for Sleeve Face. But go to Sleeve Face. It's, yeah, fantastic.
But the Scrivener's Fancy is absolutely brilliant. Who are the, so there's you and Tony. Who are the other contributors to the Scrivener's
We have
Fancy?
Matt Quatermain does a column called Boxhead, and we have...
Matt Quatermain is a comedian. He also writes the television reviews in The Big Issue, doesn't,
yes,
he?
Yes, and sometimes it's just that column reprinted, and sometimes it's not. He wrote one a few weeks ago, which is fantastic, about a true story about what it's like being behind Chopper Reed in the queue at a supermarket. It's called Chop Shop, so look up that one. That is fantastic.
What's your most recent column about?
My last one was, I mentioned this on, sorry, it sounds like I'm plugging it on the ABC every day, I mentioned this on John Fain the other day, but I had a dream, I actually had a dream about Batman being in an amateur production of Run For Your Wife and just getting his door, getting his cape caught in the door during all the quick changes. So I actually wrote that up as a story. It's called The Dark Knight Triumphant in Classic Cooney Farce. And I've just extrapolated that idea out. And someone convinces him to do it because you saw what we did with the Green Lantern in Not Now, Darling. So
did you write a note after during the dream? You know how when you wake up and you go, yes, yes, that's the answer to the, you know, when you've got a problem in the novel,
well,
or something.
I normally never remember dreams, and they never normally make sense. Like, it's very rare that you actually have a dream. You go, hang on, that's actually a story idea.
No, I reckon I dreamt. I had an involvement in Race Around the World many years ago, but I reckon I dreamt The Amazing Race, that there was, I had this game I was in where I had to find landmarks in cities against six or eight other contestants. But it was kind of like, also, it was The Amazing Race meets paintball, because you could be zapped out by these men and women in black who had kind of laser taser type guns, and if they hit the marker on your chest, you were out. So that's my idea, by the way. If I see The Amazing Race meets paintball, I dreamt that.
It's got a nice ninja aspect, yes, to it as well.
Do you know the comedian Zach Galifianakis, who's in that film The Hangover?
No, I haven't, but I've heard The Hangover's absolutely fantastic.
I didn't enjoy it at all, I have to say. But he's got a joke, which is, The Amazing Race, is that about white people?
Now, someone is sleeveface.com, definition on the site, one or more persons obscuring or augmenting any part of their body or bodies with record sleeves causing an illusion.
That's it.
Thank you to Hillary for looking up sleeveface.com. I presume she's having quite an entertaining time right at the moment. Look, the show is drawing to a conclusion.
Right.
And I'm going to have
Are we meant to achieve some sort of moral point, Jerry Springer style, at the end of this?
No, not at all. No. It's like Seinfeld. There's no hugging. There's no learning.
It collapses in a pile of architecture and morality.
Yeah, exactly. So, we've only got a minute. Grandstand is coming up, and they're continuing their tour of great grandstands of Australia. That's the only thing I can imagine that they do. It must be one of the greatest jobs, just sitting there going, well, this is just great, this place. It's all made of wood, and stuff's happening. So they're going to be doing that. And I believe they'll also have the footy.
Hawthorn versus North Melbourne. Tony Martin said to me, Nigel Hawthorn's playing North Melbourne?
Yes, and no offence, but I'm putting my money on Nigel Hawthorn. Imagine, half time will be entertaining. In the long break, he'll just bust out a bit of gear.
I'm not sure if he's alive.
No, he's actually dead.
Yeah, he died a couple of years ago.
Don't write him off yet.
Yeah, exactly.
But Hawthorn actually playing that bad.
Nigel Hawthorn can make it into the eight. That's what I'm saying right now. Tony Martin, Tony Wilson, thank you very, very much for coming in and indulging my desire to talk about almost everything in the world. Next week, we're having a special show, Songs That Changed Your World. We're going to have Robert Forster. I'm going to have Kenner Andrew White, I'm going to have Lucy Jurek, Eric Thompson, you name it. Thank you for listening. Have a lovely Sunday. Bye-bye.